The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Somewhere over the horizon, in a place unlike any other.
Hi, Mrs. Kwan.
Hi.
I'll be back in a couple of hours.
Conrad and Sally Walden were inside listening to a few rules from their mother.
No video games, no fighting, no answering the phone, city morgue, and absolutely no one sets foot in the living room or else.
But today, while she's away, someone special will show them how to play.
Who are you?
Who? Me? Why, I'm the Cat in the Hat.
Hairball.
Phenometer?
That measures how fun you are. You guys are both out of whack. You're a control freak and you're a rule breaker.
So what do we do?
Mom says we're not allowed in the living room.
Come on, kids. You know you want to.
Stop this right now!
The fish is talking.
But is he saying anything?
No, not really.
See, kids, I told you we could have fun!
Now,
no opening the crate.
They're on a magical journey.
Wicked cool.
Let the 12-year-old drive!
Oh, yeah!
This is awesome!
Where you'll find fun.
Is there a cat in here?
And adventure around every corner. Get ready to experience the ultimate game of cat and house.
The mother of all messes.
Mike Myers.
We need to clean this mess up.
I'll try.
You don't try, you do.
Yes, ma'am.
The Cat in the Hat.
Welcome to They Call This a Movie, testing the strength of friendships one terrible movie at a time. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and other podcast services by searching They Call This a Movie. We're part of the Main Damie Network, and to find more from us, check out the website at themaindamie.com or on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at themaindamie. We're also now a proud member of Geek Vibes Nation, and you can find them at gvnation.com. Welcome back to They Call This a Movie. This is Anthony DelVecchio, and with me as always is Dan Aquino and Mark Myers. Say hello, gentlemen.
Hey, everybody.
Hello. For those of you out there that have seen this movie, I cannot confirm or deny this is how real estate really works.
Okay.
In this movie.
This is better. 100% all about real estate in the town of Anvil.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's what this whole movie's about.
It's all about.
Oh, I'm supposed to watch after the first 5 minutes?
I think you were watching. Did you watch did you watch Alec Baldwin and Glengarry Glen Ross? Was that the movie you were watching?
Sorry, guys. I'm going to tap out for this one.
Where he also gets covered in purple goop, right?
Yep.
Yeah, that's that famous part in Glengarry Glen Ross.
The purple goop part.
Yeah.
Nabbed him an Oscar.
They teach
always
in film school.
Be closing, splat, and then,
He said the magic word. Oh, wait, no, that's Pee Wee's Playhouse, right?
That's an interesting mashup.
Glengarry Glen Ross and Pee Wee Herman.
Glengarry Glen Pee Wee.
Or like you can't do this on television.
What's that?
What
you yeah, Mark? Do you know what you can't do this on the television is?
Well, that's Alanis Morissette's debut.
There you go.
That doesn't answer the question.
No. So you know the slime from Nickelodeon.
Right.
The green slime. This is the sketch show from like the late 80s, early 90s that like originated that slime. It was a Canadian TV show that that Nickelodeon bought like the rights to. And then early days of Nickelodeon, they aired it.
Oh.
And anytime someone said, I don't know, they would get slimed.
I did not know Nickelodeon.
Slime!
I didn't know Nickelodeon didn't invent slime.
Mm-hmm. That's kind of where it originated from. But well, that has nothing to do with this episode.
Slimer invented slime. So
we're not going to get into it. We're not going to get into it because we got a lot to talk about. And hopefully it doesn't take us too long, because this movie sucked so hard.
Sucked.
Yes.
This past week, the trailer for the Cats musical. The trailer for Cats the musical dropped to a lot of what the fucks. So we decided to watch a movie about another 6 foot cat. Of course, we're talking about the 2003 live action version of Dr. Seuss's The Cat in the Hat.
Would it be safe to say that this could possibly be better than Cats?
No.
Probably not, but maybe the cat effects are probably better.
I don't know.
I think that is the only thing that The Cat in the Hat would have going for it over Cats the musical, the movie. Is that what it's, is it called Cats the musical, the movie, or just Cats?
I think it's just Cats.
Just Cats.
Okay.
You gotta streamline it, obviously.
Now I kind of wish they just called it Cats the musical, the movie.
Like Street Fighter the movie, the game?
Yes. Perfect. That's a good one.
Or like Precious, based on the novel Sapphire by whatever.
Yeah.
Either way, as long, yeah. I want long movie titles from now on. You got Doctor Strange Into the Madness of the Multiverse coming out, and then, you know, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse and stuff like that. So I want long titles. I don't like short Doctor Strange 2. Give me, I want as many words as you could fit on that screen.
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
That's pretty good. Well, it's not bad.
Yeah. Well, then you would be very into if you looked up some Japanese fighting games.
Could you give me one?
This is the wrong podcast.
Wrong
Mark.
Podcast.
That's
wrong
true.
Podcast.
We're getting off on a tangent.
You
but
guys,
I feel like we,
yeah, you're
we
all
need
over the
to.
Place.
I feel like we need to because we're just trying to.
Delay the inevitable.
Yeah, prolong the pain. Or not. Yeah, delay the pain that we have to talk about with this movie. It's. I've seen this movie before, once before, because they tricked me with How the Grinch Stole Christmas with Jim Carrey.
And oh, you like that movie, don't you?
I do like that movie because it has the charm of the original movie of the it expands on it. So to me, it keeps in the spirit of Christmas, and Jim Carrey, I think he's pretty funny in that movie. Mm. And they tried to capture lightning in a bottle and they failed. Spectacularly. There you go.
Yes. There you go.
I will say one thing in that you're correct on. This movie only exists because of How the Grinch Stole Christmas, because that movie made a ton of money.
Yes. Yeah.
So they decided to try it again, and it failed so hard. The widow of Dr. Seuss forever banned Hollywood from ever making a live-action adaptation of his books ever again.
Which is a shame, because I would have loved to have seen Danny DeVito in an orange costume. They really messed up. I wish The Lorax had come out prior to The Cat in the Hat.
And have Danny DeVito in there.
Yeah, yeah. This is the big mustache and the like an orange gimp suit almost, you know?
So, Mark, kind of
go off that.
Yeah, Grinch Who Stole Christmas and this movie, like,
yeah,
what's your opinions of it?
I would probably be more likely to watch Grinch than this movie, for sure. Just for the sheer fact that outside,
if you say Gossip Girl.
No, because I honestly think that's the only reason she got cast in that, is because I could see Dakota Fanning turn down that role. And thought, oh, I made a mistake. Let me do Cat in the Hat. Is that movie, like Dan mentioned, at least has a plot, you know, and follows along with that story. Granted, I haven't read The Cat in the Hat in a long time.
No, it's not a book you revisit.
Reading. No, I don't revisit it on a rainy day.
You don't dust off that old
Cat in the Hat.
Yeah.
Got it on your Kindle.
Yep.
Can you imagine someone doing that? You know, there's nothing going on. It's a rainy day out, and they walk over to their nice bookshelf and they pull out Cat in the Hat. Like, oh, they look at it fondly.
It's like throwing on like Ghostbusters. Like, oh man, time to revisit my favorite movie when I was a kid, Ghostbusters.
Right.
toss that one in.
And no one, I mean, it's been 16 years since this came out, right? 2003.
Yeah.
Right. Do you think anyone will, you know, maybe in another 10 years, this will be on TBS, right? This is a total TBS movie.
Yeah.
You know, TBS, 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Do you think anyone will be flipping through and catching it? Like, oh man, one of my favorite Mike Myers movies, Cat in the Hat, and just kind of sit back and relax and just be, and everything is going to be okay in the world with this person. Do you think there will be someone like that?
You know what I can envision is Mike Myers flipping through his TV, coming across TBS, and this movie comes on, and just hurling a bottle of scotch at it.
Now, there's a specific point where I feel like he really gave up on this movie, and maybe kind of gave up on acting, because after this, this movie really hurt him. He yeah. wasn't in too much after. I mean, he did his Shrek movies after this, right? Like the sequels.
Yeah. Apparently, he was not pleasant on set because he hated this movie from like the word go.
I think out the gate.
Yeah, I think he, according to, I could just read this. While Mike Myers' bad behavior on set was widely reported, it was later revealed that he was contractually obligated to act in this movie. He disagreed with the script and the direction the movie was taking and tried to get out of his contract. Universal sued him for $3.8 million. He countersued. They reached a settlement where he agreed to make another film with the studio. This movie and his next one, The Love Guru, did so badly at the box office that he only acted sporadically afterwards, mostly in voiceover.
And bit parts, right? Because he shows up in Inglourious Basterds.
Yep.
Man, what a fall from grace.
Yeah.
I mean, not saying he was like a hot commodity in Hollywood.
Well, he kind of was. He was
big.
He did three Austin Powers movies that made a lot of money. People, you know, I really enjoy the first two. People also love the third one.
I don't know who those people are, but they should be found and shot. But there is one point where my wife was watching and she goes, "Is that Austin Powers?" And I bet you know which part it was.
Was it the amazing Discoveries parody?
The cupcakes, right? The Amazing Appliances or whatever. I mean, he does his. It's not a Mike Myers movie unless there's a Scottish accent in it.
Yep.
I think that's in his contract. At one point, I get to do this.
Yeah. I hated this movie.
Yeah.
It's loud, obnoxious. Mm-hmm. There is not a single likable character in this movie. Maybe the mom, but she's got a terrible. Her boyfriend is terrible, so she's probably. She's a little guilty by association.
And she's not.
And she's not
smart.
But she also has not enough character to say, right. Oh, yeah, I like her. She's not unlikable, but that doesn't make her. That's not. But by default, that doesn't make her likable. She's just there.
Right. I think she's good looking. And that's her character trait.
Yeah. Well,
she's a good looking mom. But. There's something. This is one of the. I wrote notes for this one. That's how bad this movie was, guys.
Yeah. I mean, usually you don't even finish movies.
No. But this one's doable. This one was lengthwise, it's doable. I think it's only an hour and a half.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it wasn't too bad. At one point, my tablet died, and I thought that was, you know, like, wow, this is great. This is the only time anyone's ever happy to have one of their mobile devices die. So I was like, oh, wow, nice. This is a nice little reprieve while I charge it back up. But the mom early on in this film is at her breaking point, right?
Yep.
You know, she's yelling at the phone. She's yelling at her kids. And I wanted to see the version of this movie where she snaps and just, like, murders her kids.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that would have been infinitely more impressive and entertaining than what we got in the final product.
Yeah, I think a lot of this movie can be chalked up to the fact that these kids have grown up without a father,
especially the son.
Definitely. He's unruly. His daughter has reacted in a way that now she's trying to control every aspect of her life. She's gone in that direction. The mom is a single mom trying to put food on the table. The kids are latchkey kids. Having to leave them with a narcoleptic babysitter. It's really a shame.
Well, The kids are definitely Conrad. Conrad's a shithead.
Yeah.
So I wanted bad things to happen to him throughout the whole movie. And when they didn't, it's even Dakota Fanning's character. I just wrote down Dakota Fanning because
Sally.
I just know Sally. I just know her as Dakota Fanning. They try to fit in a subplot with her,
mm-hmm.
and it's such a bad choice.
It's not developed enough. I think there can be a story there, but it's not developed enough. There's no lesson really learned.
Nope.
Like they try and say that there's a lesson that was learned, but by all this. I think the lesson more than anything is don't let a giant cat into the house. That's really the lesson I learned. It's like, if there's a giant talking cat at your front door, don't let him in. The supposed lesson is that you can have fun, but there's a limit to it.
Right. You have to be responsible with your fun, which, yeah, they wrap it up real quick. They go, yeah, there's the lesson. Now I gotta go. And then they try to make the cat seem like he was an endearing character.
Right.
He was awful.
You know what it reminds me of? Leonard Nimoy in the Simpsons episode? When
here is done. He didn't do anything.
Didn't I? this movie is directed by Bo Welch, whose first and only film he's ever directed. Before this, he's a production designer, and he's pretty successful production designer. Besides all three Men in Black films, he's also production designer on The Lost Boys, Ghostbusters 2, Edward Scissorhands, Beetlejuice, Batman Returns, and the first Thor film. Wow. He's also known as the husband to Catherine O'Hara.
From Beetlejuice. Okay.
From Beetlejuice.
Oh, okay. That's impressive, because I wrote down that I thought the set pieces are kind of an eyesore in this movie. Mm-hmm. You're just getting loud colors, and it's very it's either purple or green.
Yep, it's very Tim Burton-esque,
mm-hmm.
like bright Tim Burton, like Edward Scissorhands-ish, like outside, very cartoony.
Yeah, like overly, like obnoxiously large. You know, there's like a giant hammer with nails on the hardware store, and a giant fish. So it did remind me of a Tim Burton-esque film.
This movie has an IMDb rating of 3.9, a Rotten Tomatoes score of 9%. Also nominated for 8 Razzies, winning 1 for Worst Excuse for an Actual Movie.
Ooh.
It only won 1 because this was also the same year that Gigli and From Justin to Kelly were released.
And this beat those?
Only in that one.
Okay.
Those were the other two highly nominated films that year.
Yeah, only one of those was wrongly nominated. But
so it was a box office of $101 million against a budget of $109.
So just
did you like
out.
Me just going right past you?
That's what I'm saying.
It stars Mike Myers as the Cat in the Hat, Spencer Breslin, Dakota Fanning, Alec Baldwin, Kelly Preston, who we've also covered in Gotti, so this is her second time on the podcast, and Sean Hayes. And this was just one more. This was the writing team. It was Alec Berg, Jeff Schaefer, and David Mandel, who were Seinfeld writers. And Alec Berg created the TV show Barry. Jeff Schaefer created the TV show The League, and David Mandel is writing credits on Veep, SNL, Clerks, the TV series, and Curb Your Enthusiasm. They also all directed Eurotrip.
So they were able to escape this shit show and go on to much better things.
Absolutely.
Yeah, good for them. I didn't think anyone would be able to really do anything after this.
Rich white men always get a second chance.
Oh, come on. Come on. But
and
then,
Dakota Fanning.
And Dakota Fanning.
Matt Spencer Breslin. And moved on to Abigail.
Yeah, pass it to his sister.
Well, we're going to say Alec Baldwin as well then, right?
Alec Baldwin has had a tough 16 years.
Outside of Third Rock.
First scene in this movie that he's in, it looks like, oh man, that's handsome. That's the handsome version of Alec Baldwin, you know? And then it's not far from that, where he's just screaming at his daughter on the phone, calling her a gross little pig.
Well, when I say that these people went on to do better things, I mean, these are much better. You know, Veep is, an award-winning show. Sure. Barry is an award-winning show. So it's not like they just went on to do something, they produced or worked on a Marvel movie or something along those lines. But these are funny shows.
Yeah.
So I commend them for bouncing back in such an impressive way.
Yeah. Mark, did you have anything that you were going to add? Sound like you were going
to... No, essentially, really, of the actors, I'm trying to go through their IMDb quickly. I think the only one that escaped with any positive momentum after this would have been Dakota Fanning.
Yeah, I mean, Alec Baldwin wound up on 30 Rock.
30 Rock. Yeah, but I meant movie-wise.
Right, sure.
Like, yeah. So it's kind of odd that this... Like, I was saying to you before the podcast, Ant, that I forgot how, big of a movie this was in terms of as all the names started popping up on the credits in the beginning. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, Oh, yeah.
This is a tentpole film for Universal and DreamWorks. This is released right in the holiday season. They're trying to hit that Grinch money, which Grinch made about $267, I think, domestic.
Yeah, it did well. I saw it in the movie theaters.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was just weird, thinking back on it. And then I thought, and then IMDb confirmed it, I was like, I don't know if many of them did much after this. Well,
you're also forgetting about a one Stephen Anthony Lawrence, who went on to go into Kicking and Screaming.
Okay.
Oh, are you talking about Beans from Even Stevens?
Yes, that's right. I forgot he's in that. Yeah. Cheaper by the Dozen, Kicking and Screaming. He was in Bubble Boy. I mean, come on. This guy's a legend.
He is a legend, but he's a legend as Beans from Even Stevens. Have you seen pictures of him recently?
He's jacked, isn't he?
No, he's weird looking. He looks like Clint Howard, really, who does make an appearance in here.
I was going to say, he does show up in this movie.
You're thinking of Jonathan Lipnicki, who's jacked now.
Jonathan Lipnicki? What is...
Jerry Maguire.
Ooh. Oh, no. Stephen. Stephen. You poor man.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, I'm not a good looking guy by any stretch of the imagination, but my goodness. This is painful.
You did bring up a point that reinforced one of the good things that I liked about part of the movie with the director of photography.
Yes.
In this movie, because I especially liked the one shot when, they have them sit down at the window and the framing of that shot, just from I'm not a filmmaker or anything, obviously. But that
not
shot,
with that attitude.
I was like, that's actually pretty well done, the way they, did that one shot. And then I wasn't surprised when you said, he has a pedigree.
Yeah, this movie was shot by Emmanuel Lubezki, who is a 9-time Academy Award nominee and a 3-time winner. He was nominated for A Little Princess, Sleepy Hollow, The New World, Children of Men, Tree of Life, and won in 3 consecutive years for Gravity, Birdman, and The Revenant.
Yeah.
So he's got a nice shelf going on with his trophies.
It's crazy. There's real legitimate talent behind this movie, and this is what came out of it.
Yeah.
It's an unpleasant experience.
And this kind of seemed, and we know from earlier in the podcast where Anthony brought up how Myers was really against the script and the direction. This definitely feels like one of those movies that suffered from problems prior to shooting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You ready to get into the plot? There's not much of one, so hopefully we'll go through this pretty quick, but I always say that.
Yeah, let's dive in.
We open up City of Anvil. We have a nice kind of Dr. Seuss narrator speaking of the town. We find mom works at a real estate agency with germophobic boss, Mr. Humberflube, played by Sean Hayes. And he is immediately my least favorite person in this movie.
Yeah, I wrote down Sean Hayes equals hate him. Absolutely hate
him. Yeah. And he's not in this movie for very long.
Nope.
He is the voice of the fish as well. But right off the bat, this is our introduction to this world, this universe, and we are introduced to easily one of the most hateable people in this movie. So not a great jump off point. She's tasked with hosting the company bi-monthly meet and greet, and apparently last time it did not go well because her children are unsightly and dirty, something that Mr. Humberflube does not like. She promises that it will be a spotless house. And we cut to the house where both children are awful, but in opposite ways. Spencer Breslin plays Conrad, and he is needlessly destructive and loud. He just does crazy stunts around the house, throws shit all over the place for no reason. And Sally is joyless and a tattletale. And
yeah, I don't hate Sally in this movie.
No, you know, she's not hateable, but she's not likable.
She's annoying.
Yeah.
But I like her because she goes out of her way to get Conrad in trouble. And since Conrad sucks, I'm okay with it.
Yeah.
I was like, all right, well, it makes sense because that's what I would do if my sibling was a complete jerk.
Yeah, he's shit. He's like a little asshole.
Yeah. And his pranks or whatever, not his pranks, his I just want to say his overall demeanor. It's like the Simpson episode where Bart says that his pranks are not destructive, they're more just like hilarious hijinks or whatever.
Yeah.
That's what Conrad is. Like, he wants to be destructive.
Yeah.
For no reason.
Conrad is a product of living in a house without a father figure.
But he has everything. This house is a nice house. They have, they live comfortably. So I don't understand what his problem is.
Yeah, based on Alec Baldwin's character's attitude towards the mother, I think her name is Joan.
Yes.
I think she's better than well off, right?
Yeah, she's the number one. What is she? She works for real estate. Yeah, she's the number one real estate agent in the town.
Yeah, because we find out he's pretending to be like this big businessman, and he's slick and everything, basically everything that you would think in early 2000s Alec Baldwin would be.
Okay.
You know, handsome and he's got a nice car, nice suits and stuff, and he winds up being a sleazebag. He doesn't have a job. His stuff is being repossessed, and he's wearing a girdle to make him not look as fat as he is. But that leads me to the, and he's just trying to, get married to her so he can kind of get her riches, I guess, or share in her riches. So I guess she's pretty well off.
Now this part doesn't make sense to me because, like you said, when you first see him, he's dressed in a suit and a tie. Mm-hmm. He says he's getting ready to go to a business meeting. And then pretty much a few scenes later, we see him. He's wearing a girdle, like you said, and he's just a mess. You live next door to the guy. How do you not know this?
Yeah.
He can't hide it that well.
Right. Yeah. It's a crazy turn, too. It's just weird. Yeah.
Right. It makes no sense, really.
Yeah.
Right? Because Alec Baldwin's characters, his point is he wants to get rid of Conrad so he can be with the mother.
Yep.
Right. You don't need to make him a slob for that to happen. You could just keep him like a sleazy greaseball.
Yeah. Like,
right? And it works just fine.
Like the male version of the woman that's trying to marry Dennis Quaid and the Lindsay Lohan version of The Parent Trap.
Right. Yeah. Just keep it that way. Yeah.
Just kind of be an asshole. You know, Alec Baldwin's great at being an asshole because Alec Baldwin is an asshole in real life.
Right.
Yeah.
So just have him being that sleazebag, like, you know, smarmy charmer where he is, you know, then just keep the part where he's just always talking about military school.
Right.
Yeah. If this wasn't a kid's movie, I think they would have leaned into that. But I think they went with the turn to make it like to do this common, the simplest form of saying he's disgusting.
Right.
You know.
That's true. And I think it does play better to kids. Right, because, like, you know, he's picking his nose, he's farting, you know, it's like, oh, that's funny if you're a kid, I get it.
Yeah, if it was a rated R movie, he would have went off, and when the kids watch him, and he's supposed to go to the meeting, when he would have ran across the street to the other neighbor.
Right, or if this was Radio Flyer, he just would have beat the shit out of Conrad.
Yeah.
But that's a different movie.
Yeah, like there's the whole reason that turn happens is mainly, you know, because it is a kid's movie.
I guess Parent Trap's a kid's movie too, though. And mm-hmm. that woman didn't have to get fat.
I didn't say it was a good kid's movie.
Right. It's done with a little more grace.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the mom gets called back to the office for, we're given no reason why she gets called back to the office. So she has to call up another babysitter. Mrs. Kwan shows up and she is a narcoleptic, elderly woman. She makes the kids watch Taiwanese Parliament, which is vaguely racist.
And what's interesting to me, in this totally fictional town, we still know that there's an actual real world out there.
Yep.
Right? Like, Taiwan is there. I think they mentioned China at one point.
Like, Philippines.
The Philippines, yeah. They mentioned the Philippines. So we know that at least those countries exist.
Yep.
So that's a weird choice. Mm-hmm. Right?
And if we are to believe the cat, the Philippines exist in both worlds.
That's true.
That's right. Yeah, right. Because there's the, like,
the multiverse.
Yeah, the multiverse, the alternate dimension.
Yeah. Mrs. Kwan falls asleep, and then it starts to rain. The kids are bored because they don't have anything in the house for some reason. And then the Cat in the Hat shows up. And
he lets himself in.
Yep.
And in the book, I think he knocks and they allow him to come in. But this, like, he just shows up.
Yeah,
right.
Damn it.
Gotta be quick, Mark. Gotta be quick.
I was literally saying it while you were saying, and you got it. You got to the end of the sentence.
So this leads to about 5 minutes or so of the kids screaming throughout the house.
Sorry about that.
It's okay. With Mike Myers doing his best Charles Nelson Reilly impression. And that's the scene. That's the introduction to the Cat in the Hat. He comes in. He runs around the house. He sits on Mrs. Kwan. And then he tests the kids' funometer.
Yeah.
And it turns out that Sally is a control freak and Conrad is a rule breaker. Although
he's a bedwetter first.
He's also a bedwetter.
Yeah, I would rather see the turn of Sally as a serial arsonist.
Right. How great. This movie could have been so much better if they just kind of stuck with that.
Now, those are real problems.
Yeah.
That the Cat in the Hat should solve.
Right. Yeah. Not a kid being a control freak.
Yeah.
She's a little kid. She'll grow out of it. Right. I want to see the Cat in the Hat fix bedwetting problems.
Right.
And borderline sociopath problems.
And at this point, it's just like the Cat in the Hat is like the manic pixie dream girl in this movie.
Yeah.
He's Jennifer Aniston trying to bring Bennett Stiller out of his shell.
Well, first of all, his design kind of, it doesn't make sense to me because, you know, in How the Grinch Stole Christmas, he's modeled after the Who's, right? Yeah. All the Who's are dressed, or they look like chipmunks pretty much, right?
They look like nightmares.
Right. They don't look great. In the Cat in the Hat, he's the only one who looks like a Dr. Seuss drawing.
Well, he looks like a cat.
But he's got the cat in the hat.
He just had the nose.
The nose,
yeah.
So, but no one else looks that way.
I'm glad.
That's fine. I mean, hey, listen. I'm not going to tell you what should and should not be in a Dr. Seuss movie.
The only thing...
I'm a purist, all right? I'm a Dr. Seuss purist. I want my kids looking like freaks and my cat... matching. That's what I
like,
want.
I feel like the kids in the Cat in the Hat book don't have weird faces, though.
You know, I kind of lied. I don't remember what they look like, so I'm not really much of a Dr. Seuss purist.
Yeah. Okay, did I just call you on that one?
You might have, and I'm not happy about it. But you know what? We're gonna keep going on.
Yeah, they've got normal faces. I think the Who's specifically have those faces in the book.
I think they just have regular faces. Now that I'm thinking about it, they have just like a little nose and yeah, I think they're just regular. But it's not whimsical. At least in How the Grinch Stole Christmas, it's whimsical. Mm. It looks like It just looks like a Dr. Seuss book. This doesn't match that. Although, to be fair, you don't see anything other than the house in The Cat in the Hat.
Yeah.
The book, that is.
Sure.
Yeah, I think the main difference, senior thing about between those two movies is, for The Grinch, I think I'd be okay with the level of high I'd have to be to enjoy that movie fully. I don't think I want to get to the level that I need to be to enjoy Cat in the Hat.
You can't. There's no real level, Mark, because there's nothing. Even on a good trip, you can't enjoy. Yeah. There's nothing to enjoy. The jokes fall flat. Mike Myers says, "Oh yeah," way too many times.
And not I didn't even once notice like this. The Macho Man.
Oh yeah, and part of me kind of thinks he did that to be a dick. Like, all right, Mark, come on, Mike, you don't have to keep saying that. And I'm like, all right, well, now I found something that pissed them off. I'm just going to keep saying it just to be a dick. And I respect him for it, if that's the case.
His power play.
Right. Oh, yeah. Seriously, Ant or Mark, both of you could do it. And the listeners at home, if you ever watched Cat in the Hat again, count how many times he says the phrase, oh, yeah. He gives the Kool-Aid man a run for his money.
Right. I guess the Kool-Aid Man is sort of a similar situation to the Cat in the Hat, right? Kool-Aid Man always pops up when the kids are like bored at home. They have nothing to drink except for boring old water.
Right.
And boom, right through the brick wall, Kool-Aid Man comes.
Destroying the house.
Kool-Aid Man does not help you clean it up, though.
That's true. He kind of leaves you to fend for yourself.
Yeah.
All right, kids. Enjoy the juice. I'm out of here.
This flavored water.
Oh man, you know, I wrote down, this is in the very beginning when Joan is hanging by a thread, and she says something to Conrad where like, why can't you just be good? And Conrad says, I wish I had a different mom. I mean, at that point, if you're the mom, don't you just send him to military school? And yeah. I would.
You devastate his life with her next line.
Right. And I'm like, all right, well, pack your bags. You're off to military school.
Yeah,
nope. You tell him, sometimes I wish that was true.
I mean, Lawrence that is actually point. Worse.
Lawrence has a point. Maybe military school would work out for this kid.
It's not outside of the question. People have done it with their kids, and it's worked, right? I mean, I feel like there's been movies that have done that, right? They send the kid away, and he comes back, and he straightened up and fly right, essentially.
Yeah. I think it's just that one episode of the Simpsons that we've seen.
Right. Lisa's Secret War.
Yep.
The Secret War of Lisa Simpson. That's what it is, right?
That's the only thing frame of reference we have for this.
For those counting, that's our third Simpsons reference.
Yeah. It's pretty high. Usually we're like one.
One. Yeah. Maybe one and
pretty
a half.
Pretty good average. We're one of bringing us will, up that average.
One of us will sneak in a little line and we don't really count it. Yeah. But yeah, it's now if I wanted to make this movie make a little more sense or be better, maybe have it where, yeah, the mom decides I'm going to send you off to boarding school, military school. So now Conrad really has to learn a lesson and prove it to his mother at the end.
Yeah.
Right.
You never really got the sense that she was ever going to send him to military school.
Exactly. And so that if I'm Conrad, I could just, that proves I can continue to be a shithead and get away with it.
Yeah.
Especially with Lawrence out of the picture.
Yeah. Okay. So at this point, he realizes that these kids need help in the fun department. So he starts with a musical number that is long and ends with a lactose intolerance joke. And then all of a sudden the fish start talking, kind of being the conscience of the kids, trying to tell them not to let this cat in the house or else bad things are going to happen.
So with the fish, there's a scene earlier in the movie where Conrad is being a dick and flicking the bowl. Mm-hmm. So Sally tells Conrad, you know, don't bother the fish. So the fish is a normal goldfish at that point.
Mm-hmm.
At what point does he turn into a horrific CGI monster?
I don't know. I guess, is it part of the cat's magic?
No, because when the cat leaves,
he's still
CGI.
He's still a fish.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe he's laying low.
Yeah, did he activate his super secret powers? His goldfish powers?
Maybe that's the reincarnated father.
Oh.
Ooh, we just struck gold.
Yep. The fish is their dad reincarnated.
I like it. Now, because the fish in the book and in this movie is the, what's the term? Is the voice of reason.
Yep.
Right? Like, oh, you shouldn't follow that cat. You shouldn't
allow him in here. He's the moral center.
Right. Yep. That is something that a father, a good father, would instill in their kids.
Yeah. It's the one thing missing in their lives.
Yeah.
The moral center, because the mom is out having to be the breadwinner.
Which is true, because now I'm a terrible person because I don't have that moral center anymore, right? I'm off destroying things. So it makes total sense.
You're the Conrad in both my life and Mark's life.
Exactly. Yep. I was such a nice guy, and then bam, now I am evil. I am destructive for no reason, and I need my fish.
Yeah, this is going to be the first episode of our new podcast that they call this an intervention.
Dan, you really got to stop lighting cars on fire.
It's what I'm told. The voices in my head tell me to do. Or maybe it's my wife telling me to do that. I'm not sure. She's pretty destructive, too.
So you guys are made for each other.
Right, yeah, there's someone for everyone, right?
So the cat then the cat makes the kids sign a contract for fun, I guess. He guarantees them they're gonna have fun. They sign it, and then the cat proceeds to mess up the house, starting with the couches.
You know, good old contract humor for the kids to enjoy. Yeah.
Right. All the kids love contracts.
Well, you know what? It was the early 2000s. You know, they had Senate meetings and Star Wars films. They had contract discussions and Cat in the Hat.
And embargoing. And that makes sense.
Trade federations.
Right. Tariffs.
Yeah.
You got to teach the kids someday, right?
Yeah. I mean, the schools aren't going to do it.
That's true.
It's the moral obligation of Hollywood to teach kids about tariffs, contract negotiations, and trade federation.
That's right. So thank you, Hollywood. Early 2000s Hollywood, I should say. Yeah. Now we're back off the deep end. Now it's just guys hitting each other in the head with hammers.
2000s Hollywood that let monsters roam free without repercussions.
Oh, Jesus.
Well, he's not wrong.
No.
So the cat proceeds to mess with the house, starting with the couches. So one of his first impressions as a mechanic, which is just hilarious. Then segues right into the parody of the Amazing Discoveries guys.
He does have one part where I laughed. I not laughed, but I chuckled. He, as soon as he arrives, he sees a picture of Joan, and he folds it out into like a centerfold.
Right.
And then we're like, who's this, you know, who's this hot person or whatever? And like, that's our mom. Awkward. Very awkward. Like, oh, all right, that's kind of funny.
Yeah.
I'll give it points for that. But that was the last time I ever laughed.
Ever.
Ever.
Forever. Yep. So there's no more laughing.
If you go back in this podcast, you'll notice I have not laughed.
Yep. Never again.
Nope. I've lost my laugh. It's gone. The Cat in the Hat broke it.
The funometer would go off the charts for Dan right now.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
As long as I'm not a bedwetter.
The infomercial thing is a bit that could have worked, but him doing his obligatory Scottish/English accent or whatever kind of ruined the scene.
Well,
at least for me.
It could have worked 10 years before this movie. Right. Amazing Discoveries was like in the late 80s, early 90s infomercial. It's like, who is this playing to?
Right.
Like, it's like this movie. One of the problems with this movie is that it does have like those kind of sexual innuendo, like those innuendo jokes that Dan, you know, mentioned with the centerfold thing. And then it's like it's trying to toe that line of be like, you know, a lot of successful kids movies will toe that line of like, there's the jokes for the kids, and then there's, you know, because the parents have to watch these movies too. They successfully do these jokes for parents. And this movie, I think, both sides of the jokes fall flat, both the kids' jokes and the parent joke, the jokes for parents.
Yeah, I don't know what kind of jokes they were really aiming for, because you get some like borderline sexual jokes.
Mm-hmm.
Right, he has the dirty hoe joke in there at one point, and it's like, man, that's really on the nose with that. Mm-hmm. That's like something that I would think of as a joke.
Yeah.
And that's not good. You don't want that. You don't want Dan Aquino writing your jokes.
Yeah.
You want legit writers.
The best way to tell if they toe that line successfully, I have two examples that I've seen in movies recently. Again, I didn't see this in movies. Was in Into the Spider-Verse. Whenever it would be a little more of an adult-leaning joke, you would just hear all the parents sort of chuckle and laugh, and then silence from the kids. And then there's the whole part of the DMV thing in Zootopia,
mm-hmm.
where only the parents kind of get that joke, mm-hmm. and they love it.
Right.
And the kids are kind of like, oh, that sloth's funny, huh? You know, but all the stuff leading up to that, you know, but if being able to do that is toeing the line, but I don't know if going raunchy with innuendos is the way to do that. It's right. more like take a slice of life from adult life, as though the DMV and, you know, certain moments with the dad in Spider-Verse,
mm-hmm.
you know.
You can, like Mark is saying, you can toe the line. But in my opinion, the best way to judge if a adult joke works is if you can get both the adults and the kids to laugh. Because I know growing up, there was a lot of, you know, whether it be Simpsons or like Married with Children that my father would watch. He would laugh so hard at some jokes that I would laugh because like, oh, all right, that must be I don't totally understand it, but that's really funny. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
So here they don't have that. It's like, oh, you're a dirty hoe. And it's like, well, the kid's like, yeah, I guess that's it's a dirty hoe, but I don't understand why that's funny.
Yeah.
And then the parents would just be like, that's so hacky. Yeah. It's so hacky. So why would I laugh at that?
Right. So then Lawrence shows up and completely changes his character to a beer swilling sandwich eating idiot. He's allergic to cats. So he starts to sneeze and leaves. At that point, the cupcakes explode. The cat uses the mom's dress to clean it up and the kids freak out. The cat says, not to worry. I'm going to clean up this mess, and I know the guys to do it. So he does a little song and introduces thing one and thing two to help clean the mom's dress, and they proceed to wreck the house completely.
Dan Castellaneta voices the thing one or thing two. Maybe he does both.
I think he does both.
Yeah, but so there's another Simpsons reference, I guess.
Yep.
The thing one and thing two might be the dumbest thing in this movie, because he says he's going to help them and then he releases them and they just go on and destroy the house.
They just fuck shit up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It really makes no sense.
Well, it's because the things do the opposite of what you want them to do.
Okay.
He said, asked them to help clean and they do the opposite. So they destroy the house. That's fucked up.
Right.
It's fucked up that Mark is on the same plane of morals as this movie is. Or he got that right immediately.
Yeah.
So you see, to me, I think it would have been cooler or better to at least explain that at first.
Because
if they just come out and destroy things, it's like, well, why? What was the point of that?
Yeah, he sort of just drops it casually a little later.
Right. And they look horrifying.
They've got the noses. They've got the faces.
But not even that. They look like marionette puppets.
Yeah.
They have that soulless look in them. But they also, they're that big Joker-esque grin. It's just the perfect storm of scary, like real creepy. And this is for kids. If I were as a kid, that would have freaked me out.
Well, in the melee of trying to get the thing one and thing two under control, Conrad unlocks the crate that the cat has, which he had told them specifically not to open, and the lock that was on the crate gets put onto Conrad and Sally's dog's collar. What is the name of the dog?
Nevins.
Nevins. Yeah. Then the dog gets loose, and they have to find it. So this sends them out of the house, and they chase the dog around the block. Lawrence, on the other side, he sees that the dog gets out, so he's going to try and get the dog and kind of show it as a proof to Joan that the kids are unwildly, and Conrad needs to go to military school. So they chase the dog to another person, another neighbor, and the girl's having a birthday party, and Sally realizes she wasn't invited to it, and she's sad about that, because why didn't she invite her? Because everybody else seems to be there.
Now, this is the part of the movie where I said in the beginning, mm-hmm. where they try to put in this subplot,
yeah,
and it's just not earned. It's not fleshed out enough to really make an impact on the movie.
Right.
I think it's something you lift out, and it really doesn't make a difference.
I think the problem is that there's no moment where she gets it, you know? It's like,
yeah.
There's never that, like, she has to make a choice between going back to her, like, making a choice between doing something that the old version of her would do or doing something that a person that isn't a control freak and is someone that is willing to embrace fun would do. And then she makes that choice to do the fun thing. She never has that moment of this is the lesson I'm learning, is that sometimes you can make that choice. You don't always have to be that control freak. You make that choice to be fun. And while I guess you're supposed to say, oh, well, she had fun the whole day. Most part, this day was a miserable day.
Yeah. And they both say that the day was fun, but that's, I think only a psychopath would say that was fun.
Or a serial arsonist.
Or a serial arsonist, right? Which she definitely was. That funometer was right the first time. I think it would have been cool to see the aftermath of their learning experience. So maybe have Sally go to her neighbor and say, hey, you can be the head chef this time, because earlier in the movie, she says she's not friends with this girl anymore because she wanted to be the head chef, and Sally is always the head chef.
Yeah.
So you can show that, yeah, she's grown, but you don't get that. It's just, yeah, we had a fun day. Roll credits.
Yeah. They're in that person's yard, the birthday party's yard. The birthday party goes outside. They hide. The cat pretends to be a piñata. And then the kids at the party don't understand the rules of piñata and just then proceed to beat Cat in the Hat unmercifully all together until Beans from Even Steven shows up and hits the piñata right in the crotch for some reason.
Now, this is where I think Mike Myers quit the movie, because he gets hit in the balls and the next scene is him swinging on a swing in a dress. Yeah. And I thought to myself, if I were an actor, that would be my breaking point.
Not only are you in cat makeup, you're also in a dress.
Right. Yeah, I think that's, and it's almost soulless in a way. You could see in his face, it's just, there's really no joy there, even though he's smiling.
Yeah. It's kind of a weird moment too. Why does he think about that when he gets hit in the nuts? Obviously he's going to his happy place, I guess. So he doesn't think about the pain, but it is just a weird moment. But like, he doesn't say I'm going to, like, he doesn't brace himself. Like, I'm going to my happy place, and then boom.
Right.
It's just like, I don't know if a kid's going to get like what the motivation for that quick flash scene of him swinging on a swing in a dress was all about.
It's very jarring.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very Happy Gilmore.
not good. Not well done.
After that, meanwhile, they want the thing too, or abusing the elderly back at the house, just kind of tossing around Mrs. Kwan and whatever is in the box that Conrad opened up is starting to get out. Lawrence eventually catches up with the dog, and he picks it up, puts it in his car, and starts heading towards Joan to show that he once again rescues the dog, and that Conrad needs to go to military school. They chase after him in the cat's car. Some nonsense goes on about who's driving the car. All three of them at once are driving the car. Eventually they crash while they're in town. Then they trick Lawrence into handing over the dog by posing as an animal rights activist.
Now, real quick with that, Lawrence is allergic to cats.
Yep.
He doesn't sneeze in this scene when he talks to the Cat in the Hat.
Right.
So, movie, what are you doing?
Yeah. Talk about an all-time goof.
I hope someone got fired for that.
That's number four.
Boom! It's the only thing making this passable, really.
Yeah. So, he hands over the dog and some hijinks, and then they hide in an underground party. And here we get the best 2003 cameo of all time. None other than Paris Hilton.
I kind of just didn't care at this point. So I think I thought to myself, sure, why not?
Yeah, this scene has no reason to be in this movie either.
Nope. Yeah, they're in a raid. They go into a...
I don't even know what you call it.
It's like a phone booth, kind of, or like a trash receptacle.
It's sort of like those stands, like you like where you would have, like, I guess, flyers alongside it. I don't really know. Almost like a let's call it a police box. Let's just let's go Doctor Who on this.
We'll say it's a TARDIS, right?
Yeah.
Man, it was. So they go there, and there's a rave happening underneath.
Yeah.
And everyone's wearing, you know,
Dr. Seuss hats.
Right.
And hats.
Right. The red and white hat, striped hat. Why? That's never explained.
Nope.
No, and the Cat in the Hat doesn't know. The kids
and it's like the middle of the
it.
Afternoon, too. Why is there a rave going on?
Right. The kids accept
it. People have jobs? What's the economy of Anvil? Like, you know, what's the...
I wonder if we have sort of like a Demolition Man thing going on here, where the elite rule above, and then the downtrodden and dirty people live below. They're sub-dwellers, I guess. Do you remember that?
Sure, but like it's Paris Hilton in the underground. She's a billionaire.
That's true, but maybe not in Anvil.
She seemed like she was still Paris. She literally seemed like she was playing herself. Like Paris Hilton had to stop over in Anvil, and she found this cool rave that was so hot.
So hot. We can't say that. Now you owe her money. Now, maybe it's the youth aren't allowed out or something. I don't know. I'm trying to make sense of this.
Maybe that's the military school?
Is that what it is? It's just all day raves at the military school. Yep. I'm trying to make sense of it. It's a scene you can lift right out of the movie, and you'll be fine.
They wanted to have Paris Hilton in this movie. That is the whole reason it exists.
Yeah. I wonder, did she... Because I know she was a recording artist at one point. Do you think her record was released under Universal?
Possible.
Maybe. Because then that would...
You could have
a little cross-promotion.
You could have easily made her the unseen babysitter that quits in the beginning.
Right. That would have been better for her.
It's Warner Brothers.
Or maybe she just decided... I don't want any lines. Just, I'm going to stand there. I'm going to look good. That's it. I don't want any lines.
That's hot.
That's hot. Yeah, she doesn't say anything, though, right?
Yeah. She wouldn't make it these days. Like, she's lucky she got famous when she did, because
she's
got no ass.
I mean, I think she's kind of lucky that her dad's a billionaire.
It's true.
More so than getting famous. But that's just me.
Well, she's got no ass, though. She wouldn't be famous now.
It doesn't. She made the sex tape. It doesn't matter. That trumps everything.
I'm just saying, when she did it, though, that mattered, because she mattered.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, I'm telling you now, the way that society is, and I don't want to go off on a tangent here, but if you drop a sex tape and you're famous, you're good. You're golden. It doesn't matter who. I'm telling you.
You're probably right.
That's the way we as a society work.
I mean, I think that's the way it should work, though. Right.
So I agree. you don't get any complaints from me. So that's what Mike Myers should do. Drop a sex tape and he'll come back into our good graces.
But on the reverse side, we've got people that have made that haven't gotten back in the spotlight. Screech made a sex tape.
Fair point. Very fair point. And he's supposed to be hung like a moose. Yeah, maybe I think it only works for the women.
Maybe.
Yeah.
It's, you know what? This is unfair.
Yeah. It's misandry.
All right. So back to the Cat in the Hat. Let's reel it in.
Yep. Okay. So Paris Hilton's there. Cat loses his magical hat. Lawrence tries to get mom home to see what trouble the kids are getting into. Then Conrad calls on the things to help because then he remembers that.
Don't help.
Yeah. He remembers to do the they'll only do the opposite. So he calls out to them.
This part is bullshit.
Which apparently they could hear from miles away. Not to help. So they come they steal Lawrence's car and they come and help. And then they pull over mom and Lawrence posing as police officers, pull over the mom. So, you know, posing as police officers is a felony.
maybe not in Anvil.
Maybe not in Anvil. The kids get home and Lawrence catches up to them and threatens that they're in trouble. And then the cat's world has merged entirely within the house. Now their home is a hellscape of M.C. Escher proportions.
Yep.
And Lawrence gets swallowed up by the house and the crazy world. The kid's mission is to close the crate because that's where the cat's world is coming from. Eventually, they find the crate and manage to close it. And the house gets destroyed and Lawrence gets shit out of a pipe.
Yeah. I think the best part of this is it's easily the easiest scene to realize that they definitely filmed the Dakota Fanning falling into, you know, Spencer Breslin's arms, that they probably filmed that backwards.
You think because, so?
You know,
she was in his arms first and then
they pulled it up and then they just reversed the video. Just because he catches her so awkwardly, you know, like so perfectly, but like in an awkward way.
That
your hands wouldn't naturally be in that position when you're trying to catch someone. It would be if you were holding someone beforehand.
Okay.
Right.
And plus, I don't think they would have tested the idea of lowering her into the arms, you know.
Interesting.
As a 7-year-old.
I can see that. I can definitely see that.
But yeah, I love how they tried to make it a dramatic moment. You have to let go for me to close the box.
Right, and it's just kind of like, okay, right.
Yeah, I guess is it trying to show she needs to let go of control? But it's like, it's a stretch. It's really a stretch.
It sounds like something I would say to make this movie better.
Right, exactly. Yeah. It's a stretch because to her, it's a life or death situation. That's not the point. You know, it's not, that's not how she's living her life. It's like, the stakes are never that high for her usually. I mean, it makes perfect sense that she would want to hold on to him and keep control in that sort of situation. So it feels like there's a lesson being learned, or she's learned the lesson now. It's like, in order to survive, I have to learn to let go. Like, no, you're in this situation, you're literally talking about letting go of someone's hand. That's not the lesson you're supposed to be learning.
Right. You're really in this, you're hanging on for dear life.
Yeah.
And the lesson you need to learn is that it's okay to let other people take control of things. It's not the same here. And if that's what they were going for, they missed the mark real bad.
Yep. Then they eventually find the crate and they manage to close it. The kids order. So the cat reveals that his hat was still magic the whole time. And
doesn't really make a difference.
Nope, doesn't at all. And then the kids say, more or less, get the fuck out of our house. You've ruined everything. then he leaves and the kids kind of have a heart to heart. Apparently the heart to heart proves that they've learned a lesson. So the cat comes back and fixes the house back up, saying that they learned their lesson and that was all part of the contract after all. Again, we don't know what the lesson really is in this movie, but apparently it was learned.
It makes you feel like we missed a whole scene, really.
Mm-hmm.
And it's such a cop out, this ending.
Yeah.
It's like, we got to wrap this up. So they learned a lesson. What was it? I don't know.
Yeah.
Figure it out.
Officially, according to the movie, lesson was, as we mentioned before, is that you have to learn responsibility, but there's also time for fun. You just have to be able to manage both having fun and having responsibilities.
But they don't show that.
Nope. No.
They just say it.
Yep. Basically.
Right. Because, again, for all we know, at the end of this movie, they could go back to being a control freak and a spoiled brat.
Yeah. So then we get a cleaning montage set to Getting Better by Smash Mouth.
Easily the worst part of this movie. Easily the worst. And this made me, I wrote this in my notes, Beatles song being sung by Smash Mouth makes me blood red mad.
Crazy.
Oh, that was kind of like getting a baseball bat to the nuts.
That puts you into the happy place.
Right. What's the kid's name? Stephen Anthony Lawrence?
Beans.
Yeah, Beans. Beans came into my house, took a bat, and wailed on my nuts with that song.
I'm sure he would do that for a price. If you really wanted him to do that.
I'd do it for a price. I mean, $20 is $20, man.
Wait, to me or to anybody?
To anybody.
Okay, so it's not just me. All right.
Yeah. So it's $20. You want to hit me in the balls?
It's going to sound terrible. Bat? You might not want to do this, but I'll give you $20 if you hit me in the nuts with that bat.
Oh shit! I would have done it for $5. Okay.
All right. So if Stephen Anthony Lawrence is listening to this podcast, there's $60 on the table for you to hit all of us with a baseball bat. Pinata style. I'll even go the pinata style. You can hang me from the tree.
I do not consent to this.
Well, yeah. It's too late. You've already said you'd do it. It was your idea.
I think our idea was that we were going to hit other people with baseball bats.
No, well, I... Okay.
I offered my services to hit you with a nuts.
Classic miscommunication.
Yeah.
Stephen Anthony
Lawrence, please disregard our last note.
I mean, it would definitely give this podcast some clout.
Yeah.
Right. Dan Aquino getting hit in the nuts by Stephen Anthony Lawrence. Check it out on They Called This a Movie. World star.
Oh, that's Barstool now.
Well, for white people, yes.
Yeah. Barstool is white people world star.
Yeah.
So they clean up the house and the cat leaves. And the mom comes back. The house is clean. Lawrence comes in and acts a fool. They're all covered in purple shit, talking about how the kids were doing bad stuff. And then the kids just gaslight the shit out of them.
Yep.
they do a good job with it, too.
Yeah. I don't know what you're talking about. Then he tries to propose on his way out, and he gets kicked out by the mom. They have the meet and greet that goes well, and that's basically it. We got shots of the kids jumping on the couch with their mom, so it even seems like she's lightened up a little bit, and the cat goes off into the sunset, sort of like Mary Poppins, off to the next house to bring joy or something to other people.
Yeah, that's...
Kind of falls apart.
So does that technically make the cat's hat a bag of holding then?
Wrong podcast.
No, it doesn't, because he has the crate.
Okay. I
mean, the crate is the bag of holding. The hat is just, it's a hat. It doesn't do anything. Right? In the movie, he switches hats. Like when he becomes the trucker, he has a trucker hat on and he has a chef hat on. But he never pulls anything out of the hat, does he?
He does pull those tennis balls out.
Oh, okay. Excuse me.
Which, by the way...
You really got me there, Ant.
I looked up, and because I knew that Tennis Anyone had to be some kind of reference, and I don't know if there's another reference, but the one that came up was it had something to do with Humphrey Bogart's first role on Broadway or something.
I can't imagine.
That was it. I'm like, this can't be it.
Mark, man, I think one thing you're going to learn stretch. Is there's some things that are just some things. I don't think you give these writers too much credit.
Yeah.
That they would act that some of these lines are going to be references to things. Yeah. No, sometimes. No, sure. I think Tennis Anyone is just more or less a is a saying, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, what if Bo Welch is listening to our podcast and he says they found it?
Someone got the reference.
Finally got it.
Would it be him or would it be the three guys that wrote Eurotrip? Alec Berg, Jeff Schaefer, and David Mandel, if you're listening. Is Tennis Anyone a reference to Humphrey Bogart's first Broadway performance?
Yeah.
Is it the name of the play?
No. I searched Tennis Anyone on Google, and it popped up, and it's apparently his only line in his first ever Broadway play.
Yeah, Mark.
Was that like page 6 on Google?
No, it was
right there at the top, huh?
Yeah, it was. Let's see.
This is the one thing.
If you click tennis, anyone, and quote investigator, which is the second thing that popped up on my Google.
What made you look that up, Mark?
I don't know, because I was thinking I was wondering if it was some stupid reference from that time period. You know that. You know.
You're out there, man. This is what I like about Mark. He always finds a way to top himself. It's great.
I from that scene, I looked up Canadian doubles.
Right, because he says, anyone for Canadian doubles, right, or something along those lines.
Because IMDb on the trivia is like, at the end of the movie, Mike Myers' character, the cat, says Canadian doubles. Mike Myers is Canadian. I was like, I don't think that's the reason why he says Canadian doubles.
Yeah. Who knows with this movie? He says he just spouts random bullshit throughout this entire thing.
It's very The Grinch. It really is.
Wait. It's very The Grinch?
Like Jim Carrey's The Grinch.
He's so much better.
I'm not saying he's not better. I hate that fucking movie too. But there's a scatological sort of energy to both performances, and I think Jim Carrey's performance created the Cat in the Hat in that way.
But to me, it's comparing apples and oranges, because that's Jim Carrey's shtick. He's always been high energy slapstick, where Mike Myers is not that. He does the voices. He's a little bit more reserved in his comedy. He's not an action comedy type of person, you know. He's not physical comedy, where Jim Carrey is more physical. And The Cat in the Hat called for physical comedy. And that's just not Mike Myers' bag, baby.
See what you did there?
There you go.
Yeah. Like I said, I'm not saying that. Well, I'm saying that Jim Carrey's performance is very hateable. But,
you know, man, this is really grinding my gears, Ant.
But I'm just saying that. That movie informed this movie. Yes. They're like, this worked in this movie. Let's do it again in this movie. Because he jumps around from costume to costume in the movie. And at one point, he's wearing the Ron Howard hat and he's jumping off to something else. That's very similar to what Mike Myers does here. You know, he's in like a Calypso outfit, and then he's jumping to the guy, like the mechanic outfit. And then all of a sudden, he's two guys on the infomercial. You know, and it's all kind of references to things.
I feel like this is, you remember, now kids are not going to remember this, VHS tapes.
Yeah.
So when you copied a VHS tape from the original, the quality wasn't as good.
It's also the multiplicity rule.
Right.
Yes.
So I feel as if The Cat in the Hat was like the 15th copy of The Grinch.
Okay.
Right, so it's just, you got a really bad copy of a Dr. Seuss character.
It's like if Michael Keaton cloned Number 4.
Right.
Man, that would be terrible.
If I remember, was he the kid?
He was the copy of the copy.
Okay. So now you're getting into like incest law almost.
Yeah, sure.
Right, because then you're getting a bad seed from there.
There's probably a time cop rule in there somewhere.
We reference Time Cop far too much on this podcast.
It's a great movie.
Why would
we reference
it? It's one of our better ones. It's not a great movie, though.
So what would you guys do to make this movie better?
I would definitely give a discernible lesson and make sure that the audience really comes away with that, that the characters have grown. I would eliminate a lot of other people in this movie. I'd probably eliminate Sean Hayes. He's absolutely terrible, and I hate him. So you could cut him off, right? You can even just say at the beginning, you know, oh, I'm having a big party. I'm having a big party at the house. I need this to be clean. Well done. Perfect. Don't need the boss. We don't need to know the boss is a germaphobe. Gone. You keep Alec Baldwin the same. You don't make him a fat slob. It's stupid. It doesn't add anything to the plot. And to me, the Cat in the Hat is the villain in this movie. So I would like to have maybe seen Sally and Conrad kind of team up to stop the cat in a more, instead of just like sending him away, like, oh man, like the cat's running wild. We need to put aside our differences to stop this feisty feline. And then they just kind of, they kind of go, and I don't know how they would stop him, but maybe they would, maybe they could kind of trick him into doing the opposite of what he's meant to do. You know what I'm saying? Like they pull an Aladdin on the genie with the first wish. Mm-hmm. So maybe they just kind of, they learn to outsmart him. So you basically have it where Sally and Conrad, the cat comes in, they're trying to get him to stop, but they're, one's the control freak, one is just an asshat, and they keep squabbling over how to do it. And the entire time the cat's ruining the house, it's getting worse and worse. And then finally they realize, if we work together, we put aside our differences, we're smart enough to outsmart the Cat in the Hat. And then, you know, that happens. And it turns out the cat was trying to do that all along. Wink.
It's kind of like the guy that was going around fucking chickens or in South Park. And it was all to teach Bart Brady how to read.
the Scholastic bookmobile.
This was my plan all along.
Oh my god, I forgot about that.
The one thing in Dan's suggestion, I still swear the germaphobe thing is another one of those moments like in Sandlot 3 where something was in the movie just for a joke later in the movie. Like in Sandlot 3, they said it in 1976 just to have that damn Gerald Ford, Jimmy Carter joke. In this movie, they do the germaphobe thing just for that scene at the end when the guy almost shakes his hand, you know, and he goes, ah, you almost got me, you know. That was the whole reason, like, somebody wrote that joke at some point in the writing and was like, all right, we have to tie this in. Are we going to, okay, he's a germaphobe, that's it. Howie Mandel's hot right now, right? Right?
Well, he was on America's Got Talent, right?
Yeah.
Or, so.
A Deal or No Deal.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
No. Let's Make a Deal?
No, it's Deal or No Deal.
The one with the suitcase.
The suitcases, right. Yeah, you're right. I'm sorry.
Mark, how would you make this better?
Short of just getting a whole different actor to do the cat.
yeah, that's a good start.
It's changed that. I would have made it a lot more. I take a lot of what Dan said. I would have made it a lot more focused on the kid thing. Like, you don't really need to know, you know, Alec Baldwin's character or Sean Hayes' character. Just have it on. The mother is this very important thing. She needs them to be good and keep the house clean and don't bother the babysitter. I'm going to work. And then, you know, proceed to have the hijinks ensue at that point, and they learn their lesson, blah, blah, blah. Adding all this stuff in the peripheral, the only one that really could make any sense in even my version of it is the whole where Sally learns the lesson by the fact that the way she's acting is actually driving her away. It's not making people want to be her friend, you know. It's making people not want to be her friend, and maybe that's part of the lesson she learns.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the only thing that really happens outside of the house in this movie that you could coincide with. Maybe she looks outside the window in my thing and sees them all going into the person's house for a party, you know, rather than being at the party.
Sure.
But yeah, essentially, I would have just confined it to the house and just had a little bit with a better cat, ensued it to maybe gone a little bit more into the crazy, you know, trippy world that the cat's from. You know, maybe they got to chase the things back there for something, you know, and play with that. Then all those scenes that you don't need with characters you don't need, you know, make it a little more Cat in the Hat whimsical, to use a word Dan uses.
Real quick, I'll pose this question to Mark and Anthony, because I too agree getting rid of Mike Myers as the cat would be, I keep wanting to say Mark Myers.
Because happens all the time to me.
All right. So who would you have cast as the Cat in the Hat?
2000.
I have my answer. I just want to see what you guys think.
To be honest with you, I don't think Mike Myers is the problem. I don't think his performance is good. I just think they needed to write the cat to suit his sensibilities. I think part of the problem here is that, and it does tie in, I don't want to keep banging the drum of my dislike for How the Grinch Stole Christmas, because that's not the movie we're talking about. But one of the reasons why I don't like that movie is because how unlikable every person in that movie is, to the point where the Grinch is the good guy in that movie. And it's kind of the exact opposite of the source material. Like, I root for the Grinch in that fucking movie. I dislike Jim Carrey in that movie, but I dislike the Who's even more.
Okay.
But
I think that's what they want.
But in this movie, it's the same. It's like the cat is annoying, and I don't like any of the characters either. So I think a more subdued cat, like, one of the problems is that I don't 100%. Cat in the Hat's probably like 30 pages long. I don't even know how long it is.
Yeah, it's not long at all.
And I'm assuming, I'm going on the assumption that this is a pretty faithful adaptation of it. From what I remember, it's a rainy day. The cat comes. He destroys the house. I guess there's some learned lesson in that. And then he comes by and he fixes the house again. I think more or less it's the exact same plot. But I don't know if the zaniness of this cat is working for me. I think that's, it's just, I find it grating.
Yeah, it's too over the top, where it's to the point where it's really just loud noises. It's what can I say? I need to make noise at all times in this movie. Whenever I'm on the screen, I need to be saying something or yelling something or moving, like, you know, just moving around for no reason, jumping around. There's no direction. It's kind of like the director just told him, just go nuts and see what happens. But, you know, to me, this seems like it would have been better suited for, like, Adam Sandler.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I like
a little bit more wacky.
Yeah, I guess. I guess I could see
it. The problem is I can't think outside of those two and maybe like an Eddie Murphy. Anybody from 2003 that I would put in this, you know, movie.
Right.
You know, more modern. For some reason, I may be completely off base here. When you asked that question, one of the first things that popped in my head was like, I'd like to see Zach Galifianakis's, you know, take on the cat, you know.
But he wasn't around then.
No. That's why. But yeah, that's why I meant. That's why when I said 2003, like his name was the first thing that popped in my head for some odd reason. But I'm like, oh no, we have to go back then. But yeah, short of it being Eddie Murphy, you know, like who is, you know, without having to go through an actor list, like, you know, who would have been enough for this movie? As Ant, we mentioned earlier, it was a tentpole movie. You know,
I'll tell you some names who were considered.
Vince Vaughn.
Tim Allen was originally cast in the title role.
Wow.
No.
I think it was going to be a very different movie
with
that. Let's see. There's a few others. Billy Bob Thornton was considered for the role of Lawrence Quinn. The Rock Johnson considered for the role of Cat in the Hat.
That's not good.
No. Rick Moranis was considered for the role of Cat in the Hat. Martin Short considered for the role of Cat in the Hat.
I could see Martin Short.
David Koechner was considered for the role of Cat in the Hat. Jason Alexander considered for the role of Cat in the Hat. Others in this, John Stamos considered for the role of Hank Humberfloop. Bruce Dern considered for the role of Hank Humberfloop. Uma Thurman considered for the role of Joan Walden. Don Johnson, Larry Quinn. Albert Finney for Larry Quinn. Yeah.
I don't really like any of these choices.
I wonder how much is one of those things that it's like, you know, I forget where I read it or saw it somewhere that, you know, when you're going in for casting decisions, you go, all right, who are the people that would be, like, ridiculous for us to get for this?
Yeah.
Like, that would never say yes, but let's ask them anyway. You know, a few of those names go on that list. And then the rest of them are, all right, who can make us money if we can't get, you know, choices 1 through 3?
Right. Yeah, I'm going to assume that a lot of those were barely really considered. Tim Allen wasn't in the role originally, and the scheduling conflict with the Santa Claus 2 made him bow out.
Probably made a better choice. Yeah. The only two names on that list that make me think they were that maybe the writers or could have been considering it earlier than 2003 would have been a movie with Don Johnson and Martin Short in it.
You know what I would I would watch? I would watch Cat in the Hat with Nicolas Cage as Cat in the Hat.
That's not bad.
I'd watch Nick Cage do anything.
I'd watch a cinematic universe where there are 9 Cat in the Hat movies, all of them starring Nicolas Cage.
That'd be hilarious.
He does a different accent and roll. He's like a different cat every time.
I agree with Mark. I'd watch almost anything with Nick Cage now. But what would you do to make the movie better, Ant?
Sort of what I said a little bit earlier is I would make the cat a little more subdued, kind of. Rewrite it for Mike Myers' sensibilities. I don't know exactly what that is, but it's not loud. It's not obnoxious. It's not these kind of scatological cutaway jokes where, like, almost like Family Guy, where it's just, oh, this is a reference. Oh, do you get it? It's like that infomercial from the 80s. Now we're going to cut to this, and then we're going to cut to this. It's just like, maybe something a little more, maybe he's a little more on their side. I don't know. I'm assuming this is pretty close to the source material, but I don't remember him. Is he the villain in the book? Is there a villain in the book? Is there more thing one and thing two that just kind of go nut? You know, maybe thing one and thing two become like the antagonists in this movie. Maybe
they have to kind of go.
Maybe they run amok and they gotta we gotta catch them or something like that. I'd turn this into an animated film. I wouldn't do this live action. But maybe it's that. Maybe the Cat in the Hat is a better character if it's not the standing antagonist, you know.
Yeah. So yeah, like maybe they accidentally let out thing one and thing two. Mm-hmm. Right? Like Conrad opens the box and thing one and thing two escape into the town and cause havoc, and the cat's like, oh, we gotta get them back. They could do a lot of damage and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's not bad.
Yep.
I wouldn't watch it, but
maybe I'm giving the writers too much credit.
I
always do, but I am proud of them that they didn't make a 7 reference when the box shows up. Just, you know, just say what's in the box sort of
should've.
Offshoot, you know, because it would have been way too dark for the rest of the movie. All the adults in the audience would be like, oh.
I'll explain it to when you're older, Timmy.
What was that joke? No, it meant nothing.
There's one good, if the people who write these movies or direct these movies ever listen to this podcast, and that's a long shot, they must love Mark, because Mark always says nice things about these people. I like their cinematography. I like that they did this. I like they did that. And then Anthony and I are over here, that fucking sucked. What were they doing? But Mark's a really nice guy.
Yep. Except Sandlot.
That's understandable. That's understandable.
I guess I think we've talked the Cat in the Hat to death.
Yes.
Not going to make a 9 lives joke there. We're just going to move on. But do you guys have any last words on Cat in the Hat before we do our plugs, or no?
No, I think we've said our piece. We've left it all out on the field.
Yep. Okay.
We gave it 110%.
Yep.
So we took it one scene at a time.
Yep. We tried our best, and that's all we can do.
You guys got any pluggables?
My Twitter, daquino122. Find me on there. I don't make any Cat in the Hat jokes
yet.
Yet. Maybe I should just turn my Twitter into that. You could also follow our D&D podcast account on there, at Stranger Damies. You should follow our Instagram as well. You could also follow our main Damie Instagram as well. I know Ant does a lot of the posting for that. So follow us on there. Follow us on Twitter. Follow me on Twitter. Follow our D&D podcast on Twitter. And that's all I have. Mark, take it away.
Yeah, so Stranger Damies, as I always mention, we posted our episode yesterday, episode 76. You know, we're now on video. We're on YouTube. For now, we have the shortened link of tinyurl.com/StrangerDamies. That should work. Hopefully, at some point, we get enough subscribers on there that we can get to the vanity URL and just make it a lot easier for people to find the content. But yeah, we just finished up our first video session. The three episodes was the first time we ever did video. So we make one major change for the next set of videos where you don't have to stare at the side of my face for an entire 3 to 4 hours of video. So that works. And also, if you do want to follow me on Twitter outside of, you know, Stranger Damies or anything like that, I am at Off the Mark Tweet. I am now currently trying to get every parody account to former baseball players to get mad at me. So I've already started with Frank Thomas, and it's a new passion of mine that I think I'm going to take on for the rest of the summer.
It's definitely a worthy project.
Yep.
All right. Yeah. You could find this is They Called This a Movie. You can find us at theycalledthisamovie.podbean.com. You can find us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at The Main Damie. They Call This Movie is available on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, basically anywhere you could find podcasts, you could find us. We are also on Geek Vibes Nation. Their website is gvnation.com, and we will be on their podcast stream as well. So they do at least one episode per day. They've got different shows for different interests. They've got comics, they've got basketball, they've got us, they've got other movie podcasts, they've got a lot of great stuff. You can just go look for Geek Vibes Nation on any podcast streaming app. They should come right up, or the main website is gvnation.com. Our main website is themaindamie.com, where we do a whole bunch of reviews, and we kind of have been a hub for all our other shows. Mark's other show, the Game Vault podcast, where he does the video game podcast, as well as Stranger Damies. And I think that's about it. If you have any questions or comments, you want to give us a movie you want to watch, you could hit us up on Twitter. We're the most active there, I think. But you could also hit us up at themaindamie@gmail.com. It's our website. That's our email. And that's all the ways you can get in contact with us. So for Mark Myers and Dan Aquino, this is Anthony Delvecchio telling director Bo Welch to go fuck himself.